So the plan is to look at the book of Proverbs and see what it has to say about relationships. The problem with that is it says a ton. And so to try to cover that in one, 45-minute thing is impossible. So I'm going to hit some certain highlights. If I don't hit a favorite proverb of yours or something like that, then forgive me. Feel free to use it in conversation as you step out of the room and such. But know that the book of Proverbs is one of the most, I think, neglected books of the Bible because of all that it offers us, and that it contains all the wisdom that it has in it on a lot of what we would consider like gray area issues. I'm amazed how often when I read a book or something like that, hey, Tamar, how you doing? How often they will bring up questions and how do we figure out God's will for our life on this, that, and the other? And I find it amazing how often they don't reference Proverbs. Proverbs is loaded with all of this kind of, well, what about this and what about that kind of stuff? How do I spend my money? How should I make friends? So on and so forth. Now, I love the book of Proverbs. I'm curious. I think probably some do as well. Why do you like it? Anybody? Or what have you found in it that you really enjoy? Common sense, loaded with it. Yeah, tomorrow.
This is tangible wisdom.
Yeah, tangible wisdom. Good.
Straightforward.
Yeah, it's very straightforward at times. Sometimes it's like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Right? Sometimes we're lost in the weeds a little, but a lot of times it's very straightforward. Good. Yeah, James.
Maybe deep thoughts that are expressed just as simply as
good. Yeah, it's deep thoughts expressed in a way that I can't come up with myself, right? I can't come up with that pithy statement that really kind of captures the point in the way that, of course, a divine author, if you will, can. Good. Anybody else? Harold?
The way it provides contrast.
Good. Yes, there are various times where we got to be careful with Proverbs because it gives one statement, but then if you're not careful, you're over on this side of the issue. You read the next proverb and it gives the counterbalance. Good. Somebody over here, I think, in there. Yeah, Arlene. Yeah. Yeah, the thing I love about Proverbs goes along with that. She said it deals with things that are common, is that it's loaded with observational wisdom. It's not academic, as in the classic sense of academia, and it's not philosophical in that sense of like, let's argue or just kind of think about this idea. It's very down to earth, very practical. I'm not much in the way of an academic. I study a lot, I read a lot. But what provokes me more than anything is what I've observed, what I've seen. Solomon and the other authors here in Proverbs did not go to classic schools. Sometimes that takes a minute for it to sink in a modern thinker's mind. Consider the depth of wisdom you find here in the statements that are made and the wisdom that's given, and they didn't go and sit in a professorial classroom. That wasn't how it was done. Observation, what we have here is observational wisdom that is not academic or philosophical, but it is theological. It's always connecting back to God. We don't always see that direct line, but it does get us there. Now, what I'm talking about on the most obvious, this is kind of what Jared was saying earlier about it being very clear, there are certain places where this observational wisdom is incredibly, like, on the nose. I want you to turn to chapter 6 real fast. Chapter 6, verse 6. I want you to think, before you read it, I want you to think, what are some of the most iconic parts in the book of Proverbs? Anybody? The ant. And that's where we are. Did you cheat, Jeff? Did you read what this is? Or did you just know where we were going? Chapter 6, verse 6. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Jerry Bridges wrote a book that I love the title of it. I read the book years ago, and I can't remember the content all that well. I remember it somewhat, as with most books, but it was called Respectable Sins. One of the things that we have let slide in American culture and that we don't really have a problem with, it seems, is laziness. In the book of Proverbs, laziness is not seen as a respectable sin. It's actually one of the biggest ones. It's considered a moral failure because when you are lazy, you fail your own life because you fail to be what you ought to be, as he points out in various times. And not only that, you fail the community. If you didn't build that wall for your own family, you fail your family to protect it. Over in Israel, there are rocks everywhere. You don't have to go to the store and buy rocks to build a fence or a wall. You've got them everywhere. You can just stack them, you know? So if your kids are doing nothing, I know exactly what I would send them out to do. Build a wall. Dad's already started it. Build the wall, right? So if you don't build the wall for your own family, you failed to protect your family. If you didn't build the wall, you also fail the community because the weakest link is always a problem, isn't it? That's what an invading force or whatever is looking for, is that weakest link. Not only that, but you fail the Lord because he's asked you to do this. My point is this, sluggard behavior, laziness is not something that we should take lightly. And a lot of our problems in relationships come down to laziness. Now, in looking at this, he says, go to the ant, O sluggard. So, Mr. Lazy Bones, how about you go just look at an ant? Observe her ways and be wise. Take a look at them, see how they live, and learn something. I do this. I think you probably do too. But I do this a lot. When I go to the state fair, when I go to Six Flags, I observe people. I see how they're acting. I don't know about you, but a lot of times I sit there and go, well, that person is an outright fool. You ever go to the mall and you see somebody, and one proverb, can't remember the one off the top of my head right now, he says, a fool is known by the way he walks down the road. You ever seen some kid or adult man walking down the road like here? There's a sidewalk. There's a park, a giant, beautiful park. They could walk on the sidewalks in there. Instead, they're walking on the road, not in the grass, on the road, as though cars should just move around them, as though that's how it should be. They shouldn't have to worry about cars. That's foolish. That's foolish. A fool can be known just by how he walks down the road. He's carelessly walking through something that could be dangerous and life-threatening. He considers, or he goes further, verse 7, this ant has no chief, no officer, no ruler, but prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provisions in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. And then, if you live in that way, in contrast to the ant, your poverty will come in like a vagabond, like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. So this is one time. I want you to turn over to Proverbs 24 for another very plain observation he's making. What this is showing us about Solomon and other authors of Proverbs is they lived intentionally. They looked at things in life and they learned from it. They didn't casually move through things. They weren't on autopilot and they weren't just checking Wikipedia for answers. They weren't just Googling everything. They were constantly engaged with what was going on. Proverbs 24, verse 30. I passed by the field of a sluggard and by the vineyard of a man lacking sense. How does he know that this is a sluggard and a man lacking sense? Because of what he observes, what he sees. And behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. He sees how this field looks. He recognizes this is a lazy person. These weren't impossible tasks to overcome. These are things that just took some elbow grease. When I saw, I reflected upon it. I looked and I received instruction. Again, he returns to the sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then your poverty will come as a robber and your want like an armed man. The reason why I'm bringing this up in a class about relationships is because I think sometimes we don't even consider in our own lives why we don't have friends, why we don't have deep relationships, why we don't have more of that which we're looking for in our relationships. We have not looked and observed. For example, what do you need to have a good relationship with anyone that you like? What do you need to have? What are the elements? Time. Karen? Same thing. Time. Good. Time. Time's Time's a big ingredient for this side of the room. How about this side of the room? You guys got anything? Yeah. Communication, right? Fantastic. Most of our marriages rise and fall based on our communication, right? If you're not talking to each other, it's going to fall apart. Good. So time and communication. Yeah, being out, you know, looking outside of yourself. Good, excellent. Yeah, you got to live in a state of forgiveness, right? I mean, God's always doing that with us, praise his name, or we're falling apart. But yeah, if you just let that little issue stick in your system, yeah, your relationship's going to splinter. Good. Anybody else? Yeah, there has to be a mutual interest. Good. Okay, the thing I'm thinking of, it was contained in some of this, but it's proximity. If Jared wants to be good friends, Jared Steiner's right here. Jared's good people. Jared, raise your hand. Let everybody, you know. This is Jared. If Jared wants to be good friends with Mike Wickens, how's he going to do that? He's going to have to be in proximity to him, isn't he? He's going to have to be around him. Through the years of working with high school and junior high students and college students, I've been amazed by a simple thing. They'll say, I have no friends here at church. And I look at almost every one of them that have said that through the years, and I say, you are not here. You don't come. You don't come to events. You don't come to anything other than Sunday school, and you don't contribute when you do. You sit by yourself, you isolate yourself, and then you expect friendship. How does that work? It doesn't, unless you have some super awesome, gregarious person who's like, hi, and they draw you in. But that just, those people don't exist much anymore, do they? Our world is getting weirder and weirder. The more we disappear into our awkward moments, into our phones, the less it's happening. I've been amazed through the years how often we don't pay attention to that basic proverbial thing. If you want friends, be around them. Is Bernie Lutchman in here? Okay, Bernie, yeah. Okay, Bernie, I'm going to talk about you. So I've told this story many times, so forgive me. But anyway, Bernie came to us, what, your junior year of high school? Was it your junior year of high school you came here or sophomore? Senior year. Okay, see, it shows you how much I knew. Bernie comes over here because he likes some of our girls, I think. You'll have to ask him. Anyway, Bernie comes here, and I'm kid you not, I did not hear Bernie say a word for months, maybe 3 months. Now, others might have, but I did not. But you know what Bernie did? He kept showing up. And he kept showing up. He would show up to the Wednesday night, and then he would show up to Sunday morning, and he'd show up to youth events, and you know what he would do? Wouldn't say anything. But he was there, and he would show up to Bible study at my house with the young people. And it's a very small group. And then he started talking a little bit, and he slowly started talking more. I remember one of the first times I prayed with Bernie, he was nervous out of his mind, right? I don't know if Bernie remembers that, but I do. And then I've watched him grow in that, but what changed wasn't some big magical formula. It wasn't like all of a sudden Bernie was cool. He is cool. Don't hear that wrong. He's super awesome. Get to know Bernie. Anyway, my point was this. He just kept showing up. And that was one of those, to me, it was, I've seen other people step into our church, and man, they get to know everybody, and all of a sudden they're friends with everybody, and how do you do that? Right? I mean, that's the way some of us look at that. I'm not that guy. You know, I think it's, I've been encouraging Kurt to teach this class for the longest time, but Kurt, if you know Kurt Flack, he doesn't really know many strangers, does he? If I've loved going out with Kurt at different times, we're at a restaurant or something, he meets somebody and starts talking and I'm sitting there with him, right? And then somehow I get engaged in the conversation because of Kurt, right? He has that ability to just kind of move into situations and get to know people. Maybe you're not that guy. Maybe you were what Bernie was as a senior in high school. So what's the magic ingredient? I would say just on basic, proverbial, observational wisdom, show up. Show up. If you're not in the room with other people, then you should not expect them. If you don't have any kind of common experience with them, you should not expect for there to be a depth of relationship. You just shouldn't. You've got to step into the room over and over again, repeatedly. You've got to continue to show up. And I have been blown away how often we don't follow that, and then we wonder why we don't have friends like we want. Show up. Now, you might be mad at me right now. Fine, be mad at me. But test and see if I'm right. Try to show up more often to things. Show up to, for example, here at our church, if you ever open the bulletin, which some of you may never do, and no one apparently checks the website. That was fantastic today if you didn't hear that. Anyway, we have all these things going on. Right? And then you open it up in here, and you've got what's going on this week alone. If you're a guy or a girl, a man or a woman, we've got all kinds of things going on. You can get into all kinds of stuff, and we have enough things going on that you can find some given niche where you might fit in. If you're a guy who doesn't talk much, go to the men's prayer breakfast, right? If you're a man who wants to be in a small group, like an iron sharpening iron group, we'll do another one. We have a couple going. You could join one of those, or you can start another one. It's not rocket science. Jim? Yes. At some point, you do have to contribute, right?
I mean, people, I've noticed new folks come to church, and maybe they come a few times, but they don't engage in any way. They just wait to be engaged, and we should be doing that.
Yeah.
But if no one does, then you don't see
good.
That about 2 to 3 times. They need to take the initiative, as well as us, to engage.
Well, at least this is one of those things. He just kept coming. He was resilient. Bernie just kept showing up, man. Couldn't stop him. But, you know, one of the things that Kurt talks to me, Kurt and I have talked about many times, I never thought of it like this until he said this. And this is, again, a proverbial piece of wisdom. Kurt had said, look, he meets people all the time. Kurt's like, you know, he's always doing that. But he says, some people are just selfish in their interaction. You ask them, hey, how you doing? And they go, fine. And then you ask him a further question. Hey, where do you live? In town. Where do you go to church? Down the road. What's selfish about that? Someone is bothered to come across the room to try to draw you out, to try to, you know, get to know you, and you're giving them the shortest, most staccato type answers you can. Yes, no, I don't know. That's just a selfish way of communicating. Now, maybe you don't like that person's face. I get that. You know, maybe you don't like me. That's fine. But if you're going to ask the question, why don't I have friends like that? You got to ask, am I contributing when people are trying? And that goes along with what you're saying there, Jim. Yes. That you can't just show up. You know, you've got to show up with the right kind of disposition and willingness to talk. Maybe you're not outgoing. And I understand that. But if someone talks to you, open up. And I always ask that question. What's the worst that's going to happen? What are they going to do, you know, if I do open up? Yeah. I've been blowing you off, Alice. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think of...
Can you guys in the back here, or should I repeat? You can? Okay.
I think of Jerry and Judy Dawson.
Yeah.
They came one Sunday. When I pulled in, they were sitting out in the parking lot. And I thought, I wonder who that is. I hadn't seen him before. Then I never thought anything about it. Then they were in Sunday school.
Yeah.
Right. And then they were here Wednesday night.
Right.
And they're here Sunday night. They are part of the family. And,
right.
And they're a sweet couple, and they've made themselves known.
Sure. Right. I mean, one of the simple things that you can do is go to Sunday school. You're here, so I'm preaching to the choir, I know. You can also go to Sunday night. Sunday night's very different than Sunday morning, if you're not used to coming. Sunday night is a smaller crowd. There's definitely people sitting around talking more and things like that. That there's a lot more options.
And she even told me, she said, we've sat on that side of the church, we've sat in the middle, we need to sit over here, and they're making
the rounds in the seating arrangements?
Different seats.
I'm hearing some good mumbling and grumbling about that. That's awesome. Before we had kids, we used to do that too. But now that I got my kids, they come in, they're like in a panic if I'm not in the same spot.
Christy just said she came to Titus too, and she was at Renee Lipka's shower.
Yeah.
At the Lipka's house.
Yeah.
So they're making their self known and
right.
Available for relationship.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, Karen, sorry.
That will make everybody mad at me. It's really cute and trendy right now to be an introvert, but the Bible
Right. Cute and trendy thing to be an introvert, if you can't hear. Yes, no, but I think one of the things I often think of is you can expect the world to come to you. I mean, you can live that way, but what will you get?
Nothing.
Right, what will you get back? Right, because it's always about reaping and sowing. That's Proverbs all over the place, is reaping and sowing. You know, you planted this and now it's coming back. So if you live in that kind of state, then you should not be surprised if that's what you're getting back, right? You know, I think of that a lot of times, you know, as a Christian. I can, if somebody says, how are you doing? I said, well, I can complain, but it'd be sin, right? So I can take the option to sin and to complain, but that's what it is. It's sin, right? So yeah, we can be introvert, and we got our varying degrees of that. I know. I get that. I mean, some people just, they don't have a problem engaging anyone. Other people have a hard time just saying hello, and I understand that, you know. But some of that's just fear, fear of man. We got to overcome. Yes. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, and the fear is very strong for us, isn't it? You know, it can be very daunting. At the same time, fear cannot be our master. Feeling fear is not sinful. It's being mastered by it and controlled by it. We're called to be, we're not born of a spirit of timidity, but of power and strength, right? I mean, we have the living God. Amen? We have the living God, and we know who He is, and He has redeemed us. So overcome it. I mean, I'm not saying you got to be Kurt Fleck, you know, and be like, hey, how you doing, and all that stuff to everybody. And that's a bad caricature of Kurt. But anyway, you don't need to clam up either. We should not. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. There's basic things right there, you know. You catch more bees with honey than vinegar. Is it vinegar? No, it's not. But it's. But Mike, the point is that's general proverbial wisdom that we connect with. And sometimes my point is we don't take even that step to observe what's going on and recognize what's happening. Jim. No, Jim Rally. Right.
That's just true. So, you know, and I know that I want to encourage others to be part of the world, and the way that that functions best for me, I found, is to just go and talk to people. And I don't talk about myself. I'm always talking about what's new in their life, and that's just good communication. So
good.
I think we live in a world where we want to just talk about ourselves.
Good.
And that isn't necessarily what's best.
Good. Now, one of the things I would say, again, going back to observational wisdom, is I pay attention, personally, to someone like Jim, who can walk up and talk to most anybody, and if you've not noticed that about him, observe, right? Same thing with Kurt Fleck and many other people. I've watched them, I've been there when they do it, and I go, oh, that's how you do it, right? I've been very, I don't even know who's playing in the Super Bowl tonight except the Patriots, right? That's not good, really, because of one thing. I can't engage with the normal dude on the road. I can't, because they're talking about, I'm at the dentist's office one time, the guy's talking about what was going on with baseball at the time, and I used to watch tons of sports and all that. I had no clue. No clue. No touchstone to talk to this guy about it. How am I going to talk to him about the gospel? How am I going to talk to him about the Bible if I can't at least turn that corner and have at least a mild level of knowledge about what's big in the culture right now, right? I'm not saying you need to sit and watch ESPN all the time. I'm saying it's good to be mildly aware, at least, of what's going on so you have something to talk about to as a lead-in. And like I said, that's one of those things I've learned by being around some people that are much more outgoing than me. I've also learned from my wife, there's nothing wrong with making an awkward transition. We've been out to eat before, and somebody says something. She goes, oh, we're here because we're at the Creation Museum. The lady comes up, actually, we're going to visit it, excuse me, and we're at a restaurant, And a lady comes up and says something. Jared and Christy were there. And a lady says something like, what are you guys here for? Oh, we're going to the Creation Museum because God's awesome and he created the world. Do you know about Jesus? And I was like, oh my word, Priscilla. She just got it, right? And that lady felt awkward and she was like, yeah, okay, that sounds great. You know, and off she went, but didn't matter, right? What happened? What evil, vile thing happened? Was her pride crushed because the lady didn't care? Was she decimated by the fact? I mean, come on. We've got to get over that fear of man component some, and being around people who just push through that sometimes is very instructive. And that's what I'm saying, that I know I haven't really engaged in Proverbs a ton right now, but I'm trying to give you the basic idea of what Proverbs is loaded with. You walk around observing. You see somebody with a strength in a certain area, figure it out. Ask Jim. Say, Jim, how in the world do you get past the fear of man? I've had been standing in a circle of people before, because we like to clump in our power circles, right, at church, you know, and you're over there, and Jim's just walked up and, ha, 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 what are we talking about? And he just moves in. How do you get there mentally? Ask Jim. I can't do that. I've never in my life walked in a circle and just, ha, 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 what are we talking about? Never. Never done it, but Jim does it regular, right? So ask him, what's going through your mind? How do you do that, right? Mary Pierce, oddly enough, she's a quiet lady, but Mary Pierce, I noticed her talking to people that were visitors of our church, and I said, Mary, how are you doing this? You know, what's your process? She said, well, I never thought about it before, but I have three questions in mind before I even open my mouth. I said, really? What are they? And she goes, well, it's different. I see somebody and they're wearing like a fun tie. Doug's wearing a fun tie. And so she would walk up, I saw that tie at the store. Where'd you get that? You know, I like, and she just asked him something simple. She said, usually she doesn't get through all three questions before something starts happening where they talk, right? If they're willing to contribute, right? So what brings you to our church today? They might say something. Maybe they give you nothing on that. So what's another question you could ask them? Somebody throw something at me. See, this is why we can do better. What'd you think of the sermon? Well, you might get a whole lot more than you bargained for with that question. But that could be great. That's a good point. Good. Harold, I think you raised your hand.
Well, I was thinking, we asked people,
how did you find out about us? Good.
And do you know anyone here in our church?
Right. He said, and do you know anyone here at our church? So yeah, usually you ask a few questions. If you're shy and a bit timid, have that kind of thing in your mind before you walk up. Right? These are basic. Like I said, I saw that somebody was good at that. Asked them, how do you do that? Because I can't seem to do it. Because I usually go, hi, I'm Brian. Okay. You know, I don't know what else to do right now, you know, because I get froze up. And I don't always act that way. Sometimes I'm completely fearless in that regard. And I don't understand me with that. You know, sometimes it doesn't faze me at all. Yeah, Jim. Good. Something simple as that. Good. Somebody else, I thought. No? Be a greeter. Yes.
Get to know how to talk to people.
There you go. Good. And if you see somebody who's good at doing I remember Henry Fleck. You remember that back at the old church? Henry, and this may be where Kirk gets it from, where just always the big smile. Hey, you know, that matters, right? Giving people a big smile as they're coming in, that kind of thing. Okay. Well, I want to take you more into Proverbs now. I've hemmed and hawed a little too long here, but let me ask you this. I would like response from you on this. If I were to ask this question, I want you to fill in the blank. Relationships are, where was that at? Hard. Okay, good. Somebody else?
Messy.
Messy. Yeah. Fun. Way to go, Cameron. Newlywed. I'm just teasing, Cameron. Forgiving. Okay. Good.
Important.
Uplifting. Somebody said necessary, I think. Yeah. Good. Anybody else? How would you fill in that blank?
Complicated.
Work. Was that you, Karen? Oh, okay. I like to see the face that said it because it's always kind of like, yes, Lord. You know, when they... I do that. Now, what I did was I've spent a lot of time studying Proverbs because it's a hobby kind of thing for me. I just enjoy it. I love a lot of the stuff that's in there. And so I was thinking, what are some things I would point out if I was going through even a given chapter? I believe chapter 17 is one I happened to drop into. I was reading through. I was like, hey, I'm seeing several things here. There are five things I would bring up. Actually, really only four are in it, but I add another one because that's what teachers and preachers do. Number one, I find that relationships are incredibly fragile. You feel strong in relationships sometimes, but they can break easy. Number two, relationships are precious. They can be one of the sweetest things we have in life, relationships with other people. Relationships can also be dangerous. You are legitimately, this is why some people are introverted, you are legitimately putting yourself out there, aren't you? You're legitimately putting yourself out there to be rejected or accepted. So it can be a dangerous endeavor, as we would view it, because many people do burn us. Fourth, relationships can be very and incredibly helpful, which kind of bleeds into the fifth, which is relationships are not just helpful, they are needed. Let's look at chapter 17. Chapter 17, the first one here I want to look at is being relationships being fragile. Chapter 17, verse 9, he who conceals a transgression seeks love. The person who, on the other hand, repeats a matter separates intimate friends. You ever have somebody in your life you messed up years ago and they keep reminding you of it? They keep bringing it up. They never push it off the table. Forgiveness. Forgiveness is, I have this issue against you, against the Distler clan. They're in the second row, so I'm mad at them for whatever. And I've got this issue against them. Forgiveness is, I wipe it off the table. There's nothing. It's clean now. Right? A person who loves leaves it off the table, doesn't keep bringing it back, doesn't allow it to bubble back to the surface, doesn't keep reminding somebody of the failure. And my point here in the fragility of relationships is you can fracture a relationship by simply bringing something up over and over. And you can know two people that are good friends, and you can put a wedge between them by continually bringing something up to try to open up a wound that's already been healed in their life. There's some other verses I would turn you to. Turn to chapter 16. Just back a page for most of you. I'm elaborating on this same principle. Chapter 16, verse 28. A perverse man spreads strife. Perverse man goes out and he has that seed of strife and he's just casting it all over the place, planting that all around. He spreads strife, and a slanderer separates intimate friends. Isn't that tragic? Slander is made-up nonsense. It's things that are not true, meant to be malicious and hurt someone. And see how fragile a relationship can be. Me and so are good friends. And something gets in between us because someone else who's not in that relationship is lying about me. And now they think differently of me. How tragic that relationships can be that fragile. Notice further in verse 29, it says, a man of violence entices his neighbor and leads him in a way that is not good. This is somewhat elaborating on that. That is, consider who your friends are in that regard because they can certainly pull you in the wrong direction. Chapter 19. This, I think, highlights chapter 19, verse 4. This highlights, in some ways, how easy it is to make friends. He says, wealth adds many friends, but a poor man is separated from his friend. That's sad, isn't it? That you fall on hard times, and that can really separate you from a friend. Wealth can add many friends. We know that. All you have to do is see any super famous athlete person with a ton of money, and they got a little entourage of people that follow them, you know, everywhere they go. It's easy to add friends when that is the case. Verse 6 elaborates further, many will seek the favor of a generous man, and every man is a friend to him who gives gifts. So if a guy's always handing out gifts and fun stuff, of course you want to be around him. All the brothers of a poor man hate him. How much more do his friends abandon him? He pursues them with words, but they are gone. Further, chapter 25, verse 16. I love this one. I love this chapter 25, verse 16 and 17. I love this one because I actually repeat some proverbs you internalize, you don't really say them out loud all that much. This is one of those ones I actually use around our house a lot, and I'll explain why in a moment. Have you found honey? Eat only what you need, that you do not have it in excess and vomit it. We know that. When I was a kid, we were at the Heinemann's, the senior Heinemann's, and Wilma had a plate of Rice Krispie treats. I ate the entire plate and I puked my brains out. Still don't like Rice Krispie treats, right? That's the point. We all know that. You try to tell your kid that though, do they believe you? And they struggle to believe you. No, I really like this. It'll never make me. How can something so good go that wrong, right? I love this muffin or whatever it is. It's covered with icing and ooh, right? This is gonna be great. Yeah, but eat too much, son. You're going to puke it up. Now, where is he taking this? It doesn't just stay with that. It goes to verse 17. Let your foot rarely be in your neighbor's house, or he will become weary of you and hate you. What's the point? Don't overstay your welcome. Ben Franklin had his proverb about this. Guests are like fish. They start to stink after 3 days. Think about that, right? If you overstay, you're welcome. We have the Sanchez. They live one door down from us, and there's one house in between us. And I frequently tell my kids, look, don't go there too often. Don't go there too often. I love the Sanchez, and I want to keep it that way, right? And I know what I'm like, and I know what my kids are like. And so I'm not trying to shove them over there and just leave them over there all the time and wear out that welcome. Relationships can be fragile. And I want to maintain that balance. I want to not overdo it. And you've all done that at some point. You've had a best friend somewhere in life, and eventually, like, I can't stand your face. Right? Marriage gets like this at times, doesn't it? If you've been married long enough, sooner or later, like, oh my word. One day, Priscilla goes, I can't wait for you to go to work. Right? And I said, I can't wait to leave. Right? That's where we were at that moment. And you've overstayed your welcome in some degree. And relationships can be fragile like that. So there's a need to maintain and to balance it and to pay attention to that other person, all the stuff we were saying before, because relationships are, secondly, precious. Chapter 18, verse 22. Now, I love these because I think a lot of us in the world today, at least from what I'm around or whatever, I think a lot of us don't cultivate our marriage truly as that primary relationship on earth. 18:22. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Chapter 19, verse 14. House and wealth are an inheritance from fathers. That's cool. That's nice. But get this. But a prudent wife is from the Lord. That's fantastic. That is powerful. Recognizing that that's the source of that. It wasn't that I was so creative and so great that I found just the right girl, because there's always that veneer in the dating situation, isn't there? There's always a bit of that where you don't really know. You find a wife, a good wife, you need to cultivate that and love that. Don't ever take that for granted. That is a precious thing. Chapter 18, verse 24. A man of too many friends comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Now, many of you probably have that. You might have siblings, and you're not all that close to them, but you have a friend that would do anything for you. And notice earlier there, that first part of the proverb, a man of too many friends comes to ruin. Why is that? You're stretched too thin. You know, that's one of the great dilemmas of our age and in our social networking and all that stuff. You can know tons of people like this much, right? Just this much. Now consider, rewind in your mind 3,000 years ago to when Solomon's writing this. Who are your friends? Well, it's somebody that lives in your town, because you don't travel 20 miles on a two-day trip to go see somebody, generally. They're not going to be that close to you. It's somebody that's nearby, and you have to be in interaction with them. You wouldn't have tons and tons of friends like you do today with this inch-thin depth. You'd have few. We have all probably seen a bit of that problem. We've all felt that tension. I know a lot of people, but I don't know that many people that well. I've heard of people dropping out of years ago when Facebook first took off and people loved it and all this stuff. This guy wrote an article. He got cancer, and he realized that all of his friendships were, you know, as he went through cancer, he was just getting these messages. Thinking of you today, you know, worried about you, how's your cancer, you know, that kind of stuff. And he was like, but I don't have anybody, like, in my life. I have all these people that are sending me, it's like the, you know, we don't send cards anymore for somebody's birthday. We send them a message. You see how impersonal that is by comparison? A man of too many friends comes to ruin. Why? Because he doesn't have that support network of serious, deep friends. Now, chapter 20. Verse 6. Many a man proclaims his own loyalty, and what is more important in a relationship than loyalty, right? And many people would say, well, I'm loyal. But many a man proclaims his own loyalty, but who can find a trustworthy man? That's more valuable than gold. To find a friend who is trustworthy, you can depend on them. You know they're going to be there. They're going to be a stand-up person. They're going to be a person of integrity. That is, man, if you find that friend, hang on to him. Relationships like that are precious. Many more verses I could cover there, but I am like out of time. Chapter 17, back there for the third. Relationships are precious, but they're also precarious. They're dangerous at times. A man lacking sense, this is chapter 17, verse 18. A man lacking in sense pledges and becomes the guarantor in the presence of his neighbor. If you're not careful, you can step into a situation that you didn't totally understand, and it can be a shipwreck. And that's a big issue here in the book of Proverbs. You'll find he frequently talks about don't co-sign a loan for somebody else, is the idea, this whole idea of giving pledges. Don't co-sign that loan. Don't step into that situation. Don't become the guarantor of someone else's debt. Now, we have a economic system that's built on that, don't we? We have so much of our loans and things like that have been worked in that kind of direction. That's going to have its problems. If you think 2008 and its problems aren't going to repeat, then apparently you don't know human nature. Not that much has really changed. We're going to have more of those kinds of problems. Don't get in that situation. That can be very dangerous, can be financially dangerous, can bring ruin to your family. Now, chapter 18, verse 19. A brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, and contentions are like the bars of a citadel. If you have somebody who you love and you've had a good relationship with, and then something gets in there, remember earlier about some slander gets in there, and now this person is against you. You ever try? How often are you able to win them back? Not only that, but how often are you able to win them back to where they like you again, but where it's restored to where it was? That's incredibly hard to get back there, to where that relationship is all that it once was. We want that, but this general proverb's making that point. It's harder to, or it's easier to take out a city, a strong city, than that. So dangerous things await us in relationships if we are not careful in the process. Chapter 20. Verse 19. He who goes about as a slanderer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with the gossip. Now, there's a whole lot of verses in Proverbs that talk about who you should associate with and who you should not. I have some of those here. I'm obviously not going to get to them, but there's a whole bunch of them. 20:19, 22, verse 24, 23, verse 9. I could rattle a bunch off here. The point is, you must be absolutely careful who is close to you, who you have brought in the most intimate circle of friends. Who is your inner circle? If they don't love the things of God, most likely you won't before long either. Well, that's a dangerous reality there. Relationships are also incredibly helpful. Chapter 7, verse 10, or sorry, chapter 17, verse 10. A rebuke goes deeper into one who has understanding, excuse me. A rebuke goes deeper into one who has understanding than 100 blows into a fool. Now, a lot of teenage boys that get beat up or something like that, what do they learn? Nothing. Nothing. They might figure out, oh, I need to jab instead of, you know, throw that punch, something like that. That's about all they learn. But a wise man, if you rebuke him, he becomes much wiser. That's a great friend to have, isn't it? Somebody who's willing to come along and talk to you like that. Chapter 20, verse 18. And there are three verses that basically say the exact same thing on this, but I just wanted to read one of them. Chapter 20, verse 18. Prepare plans by consultation and make war by wise guidance. If you have a big plan in mind or you have some situation that you're considering doing, it is foolish to not get counsel on that. And who are you going to get counsel from? Who are you going to accept the wisdom from? Most likely your closest friends. As much as I've tried and Edwin tries and stuff like that with the young people here at our church to try to advise our young people, and I talk to them about dating and who they should date and all that stuff, you know who they mainly listen to about that? They're monkey friends. They don't know anything. They've never even dated. And they're like, what do you think I should do? You're like, why are you asking him? He's never even dated anybody. Or if he has, it was a train wreck. Why are you asking him? Right? But that's what we do. We typically take the advice of our close friends. That's who we're listening most to. That's who has the most influence on us. Now, finally, since I'm over here, I would just say this. Relationships are needed. Now, some of us, old school men folk, you know, we feel like we don't really need anybody. It's kind of like the American ideal for old school manhood, I think, is to be isolated and to do your own thing. Chapter 18, verse 2, or excuse me, verse 1. Proverbs 18, verse 1. He who separates himself seeks his own desire. He quarrels against all sound wisdom. The guy who goes and lives in the mountains, the mountain man, the hermit, not a genius. He's not the guy to be. It's foolish to do that. Why do I know that that's so foolish? Genesis chapter 2. It is not good for the man to be alone. And yet so often we can live like that. We can live like we don't really need other people. Yes, you do. You do. And getting over that kind of pride, I don't know if women struggle with this the same way men do, but getting over that kind of pride that you actually need other people is paramount. You have got to figure that out. And then extend yourself to other people. I could teach weeks on this, but go through Proverbs and look at the things that are there on relationships. You'll find tons of information that hopefully lights the way for you as you pursue relationships. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you for a time to be together and to study the Word. May we grow in relationships. May we respond to the Word and apply it. In Jesus' name, amen.